Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The past weekend to me was a reminder that if you thought LeBron Watch 2018 was going to end when he announced that he was joining the LA Lakers, you could not have been more wrong. LeBron Watch 2018 is going strong. In fact, it's arguably going even stronger now than it was before. It's even stronger now that he's an LA Laker. And if you doubt me, then check the reaction when LeBron showed up as a Laker at a Summer League game yesterday. LeBron arrives at the Thomas and Mack for the Lakers-Pistons quarterfinal game, and it was a hell of a scene. A standing ovation from everybody in the building as he took his seat along the baseline. But that was not just about LeBron making his first public appearance in a minute. It was about what he was wearing when he made his first public appearance in about a minute. Lakers shorts. He still has not been officially introduced as a Laker, but he was repping the purple and gold on his shorts, and it was wild. Wild to see. There have been about a billion photoshops of LeBron and Laker gear in the past 2 weeks, but seeing him actually rock it in real life was surreal as hell. Just do not look to replicate that look yourself, because the shorts are already sold out. Understand this also about those shorts. They're a $500 collaboration. Five bills. $500. So if you went looking for them after you saw the king wearing them, they were already gone. You heard me right. $500, and people rushed online to drop a half a gur on them, and will probably spend even more on the secondary market just to wear what LeBron was wearing. And that's part of the reason why LeBron is a Laker. With all due respect to the Cavaliers, if he resigned with them, nobody's rushing to drop a few $100 on special Cavs shorts just because LeBron was wearing them. Same with the Rockets. Great team, amazing upside if you had Beard, CP3, and LBJ. But nobody is going to break the internet to get Rocket shorts. But they are for LeBron and the Lakers. And that's just based on what? A drop-in at the Las Vegas Summer League. Wait until this machine really gets rolling. Wait to see what Nike and all of LeBron's other partners do, because it's going to be something else. Iconic player on an iconic team with a passionate fan base. Look the hell out. LeBron plus the Lakers plus Laker fan is the ultimate power trio. If this is the reaction that he gets when he shows up for a Summer League game against the Pistons in July, imagine what it's going to be like the first time he breaks out actual Laker gear in an actual Laker game. Or when he drops an actual triple-double in Madison Square Garden in Laker gear. This guy hasn't dribbled a ball or made a single pass in Laker gear, and people are already freaking out. And if he wins a ring with the Lakers, you can go ahead and cancel Christmas, Flag Day, Arbor Day, just about anything else, because everybody is going to lose their collective bleep. This is why those dopes throwing paint on LeBron murals is so incredibly dumb. It's not a Kobe LeBron thing, because there isn't a Kobe LeBron thing. Kobe, welcome LeBron to LA. And if you're not on board, you're about to get left behind. And if you're going to feel like an idiot when you try to jump on board a little bit later on, you will. Let me tell you something. This dude knows exactly what time it is. He's smart as hell. He knows what he's doing when he shows up for a Summer League game rocking those shorts. But don't get it twisted. He didn't move to LA just for LeBron Inc. He does want to win. He wants to win badly. But the truth is, this guy wins even before he steps on the court. Oh, and Cleveland fans, if seeing LeBron in Lakers shorts was not painful enough, it had to sting even more to see him chatting up Ty Lue while wearing those Lakers shorts. And then seeing him leave after the Laker game ended and right before the Cavs game started. Here's some salt for that LeBron-sized wound. And it's only going to get worse, because LeBron Watch 2018 did not end when he chose the Lakers. In fact, it barely even started. And it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. if that's the reaction that guy gets when he walks into a summer league game, if they can sell out online, selling $500 shorts, there were a total collaboration. How much bigger do you think this thing's going to get? Especially if they win. Luis Severino is my guest. Luis, good morning. It's great to have you on the show. How are you?
How you doing? Good. How are you?
I am great, Luis. Nice to have you on the show. Thank you very much. Let me start with the Home Run Derby because that's tonight. The All-Star Game is tomorrow night. What does it mean to you to be named to an All-Star Game for the second time?
I mean, it's an honor. Last year, I didn't pitch. I think this year I got the chance to be here, to be part of the game. But it's a great experience, you know, being with all those great guys here, getting to meet a new guys, you know, it's very fun.
Luis Severino joining us. I've got a feeling that you're going to get to pitch this year, although you didn't get to pitch last year, as you point out. So when you're hanging out with the guys during the All-Star events, are there any particular players that you want to talk with and joke around with?
Of course, you know, I'm looking forward to meet the great pitchers, you know, like Verlander, Kluber, Chris Sale, and talk about, you know, about baseball, about the routine that they do, you know, to maybe, you know, to add something to my routine to get better, you know, moving forward.
Yankee pitcher Luis Severino is my guest. They're having an amazing year so far this year. How much pride do you take in the way you're pitching for the Yankees this year?
I mean, every time they give me the ball, I just want to win. You know, they give me the ball, and I will go there and keep 100%. If you know, the other team got the best pitcher there, I was trying to match the same, you know, stuff that he's doing. You know, I just want to go over there and give him 100%.
Yankees ace Luis Severino, my guest. You know, you've always said that you've always been a Yankee fan, and you had the chance to play for some other teams like the Marlins and the Rockies. So what does it mean to you to be a Yankee, and really not just a Yankee, but a star pitcher, an ace for the Yankees?
I mean, like I said, it's mean a lot. You know, I grew up being a Yankee fan, and now I'm here in the big leagues, you know, helping my team. Also, you know, maybe go to playoffs, and you know, maybe you know, someday we're in a World Series. You know, it's mean a lot. You know, this is a great, you know, franchise. You know, great team. So I think, you know, we have a great group of guys, and I think we can do something special.
You know, on top of that, you might have an opportunity to play with your brother sooner than later. They signed Rafael earlier this month. So how excited were you when you saw that? In fact, how excited was he when that happened?
I was really excited. You know, they told me, I called him, you know, he was flipping out. I mean, he couldn't believe it. So, yeah, so, you know, you need to go down. You need to, you know, to work out, you know, how you got to be paying and you know, to be here. Because there's a long way, you know, from the Dominican Republic to here, you know, United States to all the big leagues. It's a long way, so you need to start working hard from the beginning to get here.
Luis Severino joining us. You actually joked that he weighs about 100 pounds, so you know he's only going to get much better. So after the All-Star game, you're going to get a little more rest before your next start. How does your arm feel right now after the first half?
I mean, I feel strong. You know, my body feels strong. I think, you know, the way that I work out about the off season, you know, I work very hard. You know, I do a lot of stuff like to get ready to the season, and my body feels great. You know, I can still go to 5-6 innings and still throw the same velocity. So, you know, I feel healthy. You know, I feel strong. I feel I can go, you know, forward. I get better, you know.
Luis Severino joining us today on behalf of T-Mobile, which I'm going to get to in 1 minute. I want to ask you about Pedro Martinez, because earlier this season, Pedro tweeted, quote, "Severino is maturing right in front of our eyes. He has all the tools to become the best pitcher in the big leagues," end quote. Listen, that's amazing praise coming from a true legend. What was it like to hear that from Pedro?
I mean, Pedro is one of the greatest guys, you know, in baseball, you know, great pitcher. I love him. The stuff that he do, you know, out of field, and you know, hearing that from him is something amazing. You know, I mean, not every day a Hall of Famer says something like that to you. So, I mean, I'm proud that what I'm doing, and I want to do more. You know, get better and help my team.
All right, so two of you have a mutual friend named Hector Gomez, and he had Pedro's number. You called him, and Pedro said that he'd be willing to meet up with you and work out and talk pitching. So you said that before you were going to the workout with him, it was supposed to be at 2 o'clock, and you showed up at 12, 2 hours early,
yeah,
because you didn't want to miss an opportunity. What kinds of things did you learn from Pedro, and what was that meeting like?
just, you know, to trust my staff. I mean, he told me, you know, I got great staff. There, I need to trust my staff, you know, throw it. We work a lot in mechanic stuff, you know, being smooth, not, you know, pushing or thinking too much. He told me, you know, to say one pitch at a time and not rush the play. So, I mean, I work hard in that. And when I went to spring training, I was ready. You know, everything was working.
The Monday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Clones, how was your weekend? If you don't want to answer that question because it wasn't that good, change that up this time around by going to Fan Exchange. Bust on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. A great experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and then worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Again, promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. At least when you first came up to the majors, your first game was against the Boston Red Sox, which shows the kind of respect that the Yankee organization has for you. And then in the first inning of your first major league start, you were facing David Ortiz. You've said that when you saw him, you were like, wow, that's David Ortiz, darn. And then you get him to ground out to second. What was it like to pitch to that legend for the very first time?
It was amazing, you know. First time was like a movie. I mean, facing David Ortiz, I grew up, you know, watching David Ortiz hit a bunch of homers. And at the beginning, it was weird, you know. It was weird at the beginning, but after I threw my first pitch, after that, it was just a match, you know, trying to get one of the best, you know, Dominican-born hitters out, and that was it.
Luis, I want to take 1 minute and tell you how much I respect you for coming up, not only just for pitching the way you are and handling yourself the way you are, but to come here and learn a second language and then to conduct an interview like this and several others like it in a second language. It really is amazing. You talked about how tough it was when you were still learning English. Your English is so good now, but in the early days, how tough was it?
It was really tough, you know. When I came here, I knew a little bit, but not much. It was tough, you know, to like order food or communicate with my teammates. It was tough, but you know, I love the English, you know, learning. So, you know, every year that I came to the United States, I try to every time pick something. If I don't know something, I ask my teammates and they tell me. I also watch a lot of movies, man. I love watching Friends, so I think I learned a lot of English from watching Friends, and that kept me going.
Oh, that's awesome. So who is your favorite character on Friends?
Joey.
Great. That's awesome. You know, you mentioned food. This is also great. You learned how to cook by talking with your mom on FaceTime, right? What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, it was weird. You know, it was fun. But like I said, I mean, it's, in rookie ball, it's a tough time. You have to learn, you know, how to cook, how to take care of yourself. So I think, you know, United States being here made me grow up more as a man, you know, as a person. And that maybe teach me a lesson, you know. When you came here, you don't have your mom here. You don't have nobody. You have to take care of yourself and be a man.
Yankees ace, Luis Severino, joining us. Well, you're that. Listen, you're working with T-Mobile and the Hats Off for Heroes campaign during the Home Run Derby, a really, really good cause. What are you doing with those folks? And then how can our listeners get involved?
Oh, this is something amazing here, you know. They're doing custom hats. I think I kind of made one for me. You know, they're looking great here, and they're doing it for a great cause, you know, for the veterans, you know, United States. I mean, I think everybody should come here and see what they're doing. I mean, I think I'm going to give a friend's Yankee hat after I get out of here.
So if they want to get involved, is there a way for the listeners to get involved? If they want to reach out, how do they do that?
I'd have to come here. You know, we're at T-Mobile, a store at 11 Street in D.C. So they should come here. Everybody's here. You know, we have a bunch of people out there. You know, have a bunch of people here working on that. And they do a lot of cool stuff. I think I here with Simpson and a bunch of stuff. So they should come here and get, you know, everything that you have. If you have a picture, your daughter, you want to put it here, then we'll do it.
Excellent cause. Great ambassador for the event, too. Luis Severino, a two-time All-Star. Luis, you handled that like a boss. So good to meet you. Great to have you on the show. Have a great week, and really nice to talk to you, Luis.
Thank you very much, man.
Sleep is a third of your life. Make it the best third by getting a Casper. The Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams to give you a great night of sleep. You spend one third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. Its breathable design lets you sleep cool, and this is something I didn't know. It also regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And let me tell you, there are lots of people raving about the Casper mattress. More than 20,000 others love their Casper mattress, giving it an average rating of 4.8. You cannot argue with results like that. And here's yet another reason. The price will not keep you up at night. You can also order sheets, pillows, and that will give you the complete Casper experience. Why is it so affordable? Well, Casper cuts out the middleman and delivers it straight to you. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Right now, for my listeners, you can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/jungle. Once again, casper.com/jungle. Use the promo code jungle at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. Once again, casper.com/jungle, promo code jungle. Last week was lit, straight lit. Don't believe me? Check out the Daily Jungle podcast, where we run back the best of the best content every single day for free. Every single day. It's lit! Last week we heard from Vic and NoCal, the VIC, lit! Brad in Corona, the BIC, lit!
It's lit!
Caleb in Green Bay, fat! Just fat. Kidding, Caleb. Just kidding, bro. Chad in LA, both the Canadians. What I'm saying was we had an electric preview of what's to come on Friday. And if you missed it, you need to double back. Hit it up. It was that good. That lit. Now, speaking of the previews, I've been profiling the field. As we get closer, I want to make sure you know exactly who you're listening to come Friday. Today, I want to take a look at the golden ticket holders. I want to see who stands out above the rest, if anybody does. I want to try and speculate on who's got a shot to get on the air, who's got a shot to make a deep run, if any of them can, and who needs to call between now and Friday to make sure they cement that spot. Now, by my count, 8 are gripping tickets right now. 8. Rick in Buffalo, Danica in Jacksonville, Rich in Copyright Hills, Jeff in San Antonio, Ken in Sacramento, Mona in Knoxville, John in New York, and Dan in Denver. Why don't we start with the most recent recipient, Dan in Denver, who got his ticket only last week.
Jim, I'm like a hack-off connoisseur. I loved it, which is why I love watching Matt and Tyler think they're strong callers and not realize everyone else thinks they suck. I'm sad it's gone, but I get my fix with those two guys and Jeff Passan. Watching Passan bring home third with one of the most incoherent calls in, quote, SmackDown history is like watching that kid with webbed feet take a handoff at the Cleveland Browns practice and run it 50 yards to the house while the defense pretends to miss shackles. And Romy, anyone else think it's so cute that Team Canada's clicked up like they're in high school? I mean, can't you just see these guys on the phone late at night, laying on their stomachs, hair in a high ponytail, a charcoal mask on, those things in between their toes after a pedicure? Rome, I heard you say that these guys finished 11th and 12th. You know who else finished outside the top 10? Parody Larry, Josh in Detroit, my accountant who doesn't even listen to the show.
The RTN. That's his second ticket in as many years. Last year, he made the air, and then he got run. This year, he's still one good phone call away from making me really want him to get that Vine come Friday. He knows it. I told him as much last week. So look for Dan to come back in sometime in the next couple of days. He's got to if he wants to be there on Friday. Right now, Stucknut has him going off at plus 1,500. But then again, what do the odds matter if you don't make the cut? What do the odds matter if you're not holding a ticket? Get in here, Daniel. You may have that ticket right now, but that does not mean you'll have it on Friday. Now, Danica is one of the more curious cases. Danica in Jacksonville was the first. She pulled her ticket way back last year. In fact, I've never seen anything quite like this, I don't think. She ripped her ticket less than a month removed from Smack Off 23.
Blake Bortles has shown the Jaguars exactly who he is, and that's not our starting quarterback. The team is not with this guy. The energy last night was absolutely just down. Nobody is here for this. Nobody wants to stand for this. And the thing about it is, there's nothing left to do. So now I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
I mean, an instant classic. I'm out of money for season tickets, so all I can do is go to the game, get drunk, find a tenderoni, and take him home so I can ruin him. An amazing jungle moment. I'm out. Yeah, that too. Instant classic, amazing jungle moment. I mean, it still gets reset on a regular basis in both tweets and emails. However, the queen, Danica, has been noticeably quiet ever since. You know, I badly want Lady Clone representation in the Smackoff, especially a Lady Clone who's got that kind of game, that kind of rap. But I think that even Danica knows she needs to remind us that she's still alive before Friday. Danica, where are you? Then you've got John. John in New York. He really could just be John, because nobody needs him to tell them where he's from when he opens up his Gap.
I see self-promotion is no issue for you, though, Rich, with those whack Act 50 t-shirts. What was that? Some sort of pimple medication promotion, Rich? And I'm sure you guys had a lot of fun looking for Regis's teeth in your birthday cake after he helped you blow out the candles. I would have loved to have heard more of the so-called legends, Jim. Another bunch of yellow-backed cowards. Come out of the witness protection program and mix up the smack. Mike and Indy probably now holds the record for the oldest adult having the longest diaper rash. You better sure take a trip to San Antonio and ask Jeff to change your diaper, because that's the only thing that sissy should be good at by now. Afterwards, both of you can sit down and just cry at each other. We'll call it the first annual bitch-off.
I mean, the content's not as funny as the delivery, right? It's not as funny as it sounds, but John's got his ticket. He has already successfully defended that ticket once, which I respect. But the last time he called in, I told him it would be in his best interest to push that ticket right to the middle of the table and get in one more rep. We'll see if he takes my advice this week or if he gambles on his current body of work being good enough to crack the air on Friday. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Do not gamble on your current body of work being good enough come Friday. Then you've got Rich in Copyright Hills. As old school as this show gets, he was part. How old school? He was part of Leffen Laguna's raid last year. Rich in Copyright Hills was one of the old geezers in the SI photo shoot. And 2 months after Leff went back to back, Rich checked in on his own, and he snatched an invite for himself.
I'm just coming off a high from a great sports weekend. We get Carmelo Anthony dropped into our lap. Do you understand how big that is, Rome? This is unbelievable. I know exactly what they're shooting for. The Stiftung to Golden State Warriors and KD, I think, finally, that tweet pissed somebody off enough. I'm looking forward to another great week of wins, and I'll tell you this. I assure you, the autumn wind is not a Raider. It is a collective commitment to growing a tail on national TV. That team is finished. As always, love to hate.
Hey, Rich, much like you yourself, that take did not age well. This cat talking about growing a tail on national television. Hey, Rich, 1996 called, man. You got to update your rap. But he did have a top 10 finish going all the way back to 1996. So with his Rich history, and when he used to try to sell my shirts, hence the gloss Copyright Hills, with his Rich history, he's got that ticket right now. And now he's looking for some real estate, key real estate on the 20th. He's trying to find a way to get back in. He's got a golden ticket. He is an old school guy. Then you've got Ken in Sacktown. Ken in Sacktown has been calling this show for a number of years, but he's never been there the day of the Smackoff. So he's like a rookie's rookie. He got his ticket back in January, based pretty much on my curiosity on how one of the more thoughtful, intelligent listeners would do in the Smackoff. I mean, normally you think about, what is it? It's all about vitriol and hate and clone-on-clone crime. This guy's not about those things. So I'm kind of curious, if we drop one of the more thoughtful guys into that element, how would he do? He's known for long-form calls. He's known for straight sports takes. He's known for his thoughts on the issues. They're thoughtful. They're unafraid. They make the show better. But can he run it? Can he run that smack? Dan in Denver, for one, did not think so. And here was Ken's response to him.
Are you mad, Dan, for Denver with someone who comes with facts? Are you a person that wants alternate facts? Dude, you done got out of your lane. I think you done dumped your pants. You got size 5 hands. You probably wear a size 7 shoe. I got a 12 size hand, and I wear a 12 shoe. So I don't worry about little guys like you.
Don't worry about little guys like you with a size 5 hand and a size 7 shoe. I got a size 12 shoe and a size 12 hand. And I'll use those size 12 hands to give them to you. And I'll use that size 12 shoe and put it up your ass. He didn't say that, but I'm helping him along. He doesn't need that help. You got that, Dan? Look, it's unclear if Ken will even show up on Friday. I think he probably will. It's unclear if Ken has the kind of game that translates to Friday. Game for days, but will it translate for Friday? Maybe. We got taste right there. If I'm looking forward to finding out, and I am, we'll see what he has. Ken, my man. I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying you need to. Maybe you consider getting in one more rep, though, before the 20th. Hit me up. You know where to find me. Speaking of the lady clones, Mona in Knoxville did the almost unthinkable. She comes out of nowhere. She makes one single call, and on the strength of that call alone, she got a golden ticket. That's how good she was. That's how different she was. And she checks a few boxes for us. She checks a few different demos. Demo 1, Lady Clone. Demo 2, Badass. Here's what earned her ticket back in June.
Hi there. I come correct from Knoxville, Tennessee as one of your lady clones. I've survived breast cancer, brain cancer, domestic violence, and a gunshot wound. And I have all my teeth, and I don't smoke, I don't drink. And as an ER nurse, I do more by 7 a.m. than most of y'all clones do all year. So if I don't qualify for a golden ticket, no worries. I'm a helicopter pilot. I can fly right out of there. So as for Brad Lee in Corona, Mikey in Indy, and Vicky in NorCal, I'm coming for y'all, and y'all have not got anything on me, and I'm out.
Perfectly crafted take. So what I'm saying is when somebody calls the program that I've never heard of and they show up like that and they know the show cold and they spit that kind of game, that's the kind of thing that will get you a golden ticket out of nowhere on the first call. I mean, she calls up and says, I had breast cancer, I had brain cancer, I was a victim of domestic violence, I was shot, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I get more done by 7 a.m. every single day than you clones get done all year long. I want that golden ticket. And if not, it doesn't matter because I can fly a helicopter right up out of here. And I'm an ER nurse. Yeah, because I was not going to give her one on the strength of that. Except not everybody's down. Not everybody is in favor of her getting a ticket. No names mentioned. Lauren in Naples. The ticket did not sit well with Lauren in Naples. And Lauren's voicemails got back to Mona, who had this for Lauren last week.
I do want you to tell Lauren that if she wants to get a golden ticket, now that you taught her to beg, maybe you can teach her to sit up, roll over, fetch. I don't know, whatever you want. And I know how I sound, and it's not from cigarettes. It's from radiation that I got after chemo. Big deal. I could be for real by the bench, too. This is a jungle. It's not a petting zoo.
She's so badass, Mona. So some of you are trying to crack on Mona for sounding like that because she burns heaters. She lights one heater after another. She's like, hey. I don't sound like this because I smoke. I don't smoke. It's because of chemo. I had cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer. That's why I sound like this, and I don't give a damn. Like I'm not going to take her call next Friday. Like I'm not going to take her call next Friday. I don't care how deep that field is. It's not as deep as the curiosity I have for how Mona shows up on the 20th. It's not as deep for the respect I have for her. If all of that is true, and I've got no reason to believe it's not, it's not as deep as the respect I have for her for beating back all that and showing up the way she does. It's badass. And last, but certainly not least, Jeff in San Antonio. Jeff in San Antonio, a clone favorite. I mean, does this guy even need the treatment? You already know him from his infamous crying sobbing call way back in October of last year.
You know when you find the one for you, and it's really simple. And when she told me that we were going to name our girl Jordan after 45, I knew she was the one. I absolutely owe so much of where I've been in life to listening to your show. Knock 'em dead like you always do. You haven't been giving yourself enough credit lately. So props to you, war me and my fiance, and war Jordan.
An amazing phone call. You know, I used to say back in the day quite a bit, you can't cry at work. You cannot cry at work. You simply cannot cry at work unless you receive a terrible telephone call at work, unless something horrible happened and somebody alerted you to that fact. What I'm getting at is, I mean, work's tough, right? No matter what you do, work is tough. Things don't go your way. You don't get a promotion. You don't close that sale. You've got a boss you hate. Whatever it is, you cannot cry at work. There's no crying at work unless something horrible happens. My man not only cried, he cried in front of several billion people on several hundred radio stations and in space and who knows where else. Absolutely incredible. So that call, as you might imagine, not only jumped the day, jumped the week, jumped the month, it jumped the freaking year. That call will jump the decade. That call will jump centuries. Of course, that won him a ticket. A ticket, however, that got choppered when I heard him he forgot his brand. He forgot who he was and then tried because people were coming for him and he got defensive. So Jeff tried to bow up and run actual smack.
I carry the smack hammer heavy and I'm coming for all the legends. Vic and No Call, his little heroin addiction that he tries to play off with calls to your show, done. So War me winning the smack off next year, and war Rome as always. I'm out.
Man, that hurt. That hurt, didn't it? That hurt me so much more than that hurt him. That really hurt. That hurt. You know, it should always be war me, not war me and war me winning the smack off. War me and my fiance.
War me and my fiance.
But Jeff, let me tell you about Jeff. Jeff is a badass. Why? He has a kid. This badass called back in May. May reached into the spinning propeller. Reached into a spinning propeller and snatched his ticket right back from the blades of that chopper. Jeff, what's it mean to you to marry the fiance you love so much? Can you put that in words?
Not without crying, and literally, like, tears are welling up in my eyes right now. There's nothing else that I want than to make her my wife.
Dude, why did you think that you were going to cry? You're holding this thing together beautifully. You're fine. You're fine.
I am crying, actually. There are tears literally running down my face, but I'm not alluding to it, I guess. I'm handling it a little bit better than I have in the past.
How often do you cry? Do you cry every day or only when you call this show?
Man, to be honest, if I tried hard enough, I could probably think about crying every single day. I'm just a very empathetic type of person, always have been. So I can look at the news or I can see something that's going on around me and really, really start bawling for no apparent reason.
You are in touch with your emotion. You should be. I respect it. You, my friend, have re-earned the golden ticket. Give it back to him, Alvin.
'Cause I've got a golden ticket.
This guy's a stud. How mad does that make all of you? You all love to hate this guy so much. You love to hate this guy and the fact that he's got a ticket, a golden ticket, for being in touch with his emotions. And y'all get so furious about that. I'm Team Jeff. I've said it before. You can crack the kid, but I've got his back. And that is your golden ticket field. Rick in Buffalo is a part of it as well, but he's in a tier of his own. He got the profile treatment last week and then spent the rest of last weekend beefing with Vic on Twitter. You know what he sounds like. You know what he's capable of. Stucknut has him as the clear-cut favorite of all the ticket recipients. So it is Rick and everybody else with that group. The question now is, do you want to be a part of it? Did you hear those calls and do you think that you can do better? You still could get in. It's still there for you. The smack off is Friday. To win a ticket, get on the air on Friday. You've got to bring some serious heat. but I've got vines. I've got them left. Like Mona. Mona made one call and she got in. It is possible. It's really hard, but it's not impossible. You can do it. Hit me up. Let's find out. 4 days and counting. Cannot wait. There is your golden recipient breakdown. Quick shout out to those of you who have your own business, because I know a number of you do. The U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business because it reaches every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Once again, I have used Stamps.com for a long time because it is so fast, it is so easy, it is so convenient, and it does save me money. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. All you have to do is go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. Once again, I love this service. I know you will too. Go to Stamps.com and enter jungle. We are joined by Zach Collins. Zach, great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing great. It's great to visit with you. Let me first ask you, you're coming off that strong game that I mentioned off the top against Boston yesterday. So starting right there, how pleased were you with that performance and how the team played overall?
Definitely pleased. I think that was my best offensive game so far. Offense has been probably the weakest part of my game, you know, throughout summer league this year. Defensively, I felt like I've been pretty consistent, but offensively, that you know, had to get in my rhythm a little bit. And yesterday, I felt really good, so you know, I was happy to do that. And you know, but as a team, you know, we've been playing, you know, pretty consistently and pretty unselfishly the whole summer league. And when you play with guys like that on your team, it only boosts your own performance.
Zach Collins joining us. You know, Zach, for those who think that the summer league games maybe are not as competitive, maybe not as important, then they're not watching my simulcast right now, because we rolled in some video of you rocking that mask. You broke your nose before the first game, and yet there you were playing yesterday. What happened, and how has it been playing with that busted nose and that mask?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It happened at the end of the first practice for summer league. I was playing defense, and I got hit in the nose, like literally 10 seconds left in the practice, and it ended up being broken. And you know, that whole day we were trying to figure out what we had to do, and you know, they put it back into place, and then I got fitted for a mask, and it all kind of happened, you know. And I was out of contact the whole week, so it was kind of a process, but you know, luckily it wasn't as bad to where I would need surgery or anything. I honestly don't even think about it anymore unless I touch it or get hit there. So, but the mask helps a lot. You know, it's not the greatest thing to wear when you're trying to play a game, but you know, it protects my nose, so it's all good.
Zach Collins joining us. So what about the approach? I mean, that win takes you to the semis of the summer league. And again, there's that argument that the summer league results don't really matter very much, but as a competitor, you're looking to win every single time you take the court. So how do you go about approaching these games?
Yeah, definitely. You know, anytime you're in it doesn't matter, you know, what league you're in, you want to win. And I think we have every guy on this team, you know, the summer league team wants to win, whether you know it's a big deal or not. You know, we want to win wherever we're playing. So the whole mindset this whole time is to win. You know, we came in with the goal to win the whole summer league, so now we're only two games away from doing that. And, you know, we're all really excited about that.
I think it's really interesting, and I think it's even more interesting because of where it is in Vegas. Now, playing in the summer league means that you're back in your hometown, where you were a legend at Bishop Gorman. What's it like to be back in Vegas and balling?
Yeah, it feels great. You know, anytime I can come back here and play in front of my family and friends, it's always great. And to be able to, you know, you know, finish a game and not just, you know, be stuck in a hotel the whole time, to be able to go home and hang out with my family, get a home-cooked meal, see all my buddies that I grew up with, you know, it makes everything that much better.
Exactly. The thing is, I mean, that program is insane. That's a big time program. I wonder, do you know very much, obviously you do, what it was like back in the day? For instance, I'm a Big West guy. I went to UC Santa Barbara. So when UNLV really had that thing rolling and Tark had those guys going, they'd roll into our arena and it was almost like the LA Lakers were coming. I mean, they're ripping off Final Fours and national championships. How connected were you as you look back to those great teams and some of those guys?
You know what? Not too much.
Right.
You know, I the only thing I could, you know, you learn about that is watching highlights and hearing stories about, you know, how dominant those teams were back in the day. And growing up in Vegas, going to games all the time, you always heard people, you know, talking about, oh, back in the day, you know, we were this, and, you know, you just hear those stories all the time growing up. But, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch, you know, all that greatness.
No, I figured. I want to see how much of that trickled down to you. But they're right. Yeah. You know, people like to say, hey, back in the day, we were this and we were that. But they were all that. Now, if we go back to your early days in Vegas, your father, Mike, was saying that you were always the one saying, you got to take me to the gym. I got to get my work in. He's even said there were times when, honestly, he may have preferred to just stay home and watch some TV, but you so badly wanted to get out there. What was it about basketball that got in your blood the way it did, as early as it did?
You know, I think at an early age, it was just a lot of fun for me, and it was something that, you know, I saw pretty good success at, you know. I never had a really good growth spurt, but I was always kind of tall and grew, you know, gradually. And growing up, when you're taller than everybody and you play basketball, you're probably going to do well. And it was just something that I really enjoyed playing. It's something I always wanted to do. And once I got older and realized that this is something I wanted to take seriously, and, you know, that's when I started doing individual workouts. I just knew that I needed to work and I needed to, you know, stay ahead of the curve. And you know, you hear those stories all the time growing up about, you know, if you're not in the gym, someone's out there trying to take your spot. Or even if you are in the gym, there's somebody else trying to work just as hard as you. And, you know, I never wanted to slow down. I never wanted to get behind, you know, the schedule of working out and getting better. So, you know, like you said, there'd be some nights where I didn't want to go either. But I knew, you know, in the back of my head that I really needed to get up and go work out and get better.
Trailblazer Zach Collins joining me for a few more moments, and it paid off, right? So you have this big year at Gonzaga as a freshman, then you were the 10th pick in last year's draft, and then this is going the way things have always gone for you, but then last year was a challenge in the sense that for the first time in your life, you were not playing huge minutes every single night. That was something different. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was definitely an adjustment, you know, and I tell people, you know, I had to deal with, you know, DNPs, and that's something I really have never dealt with before. So mentally, that was a little tough. It was obviously a little humbling too, and you know, it really kind of gets you to work as hard as you possibly can to get on that court. It requires you to ask questions around the coaching staff, like what can you do to get on the court, and you know, what am I not doing that's, you know, keeping me from off the court. So, you know, you just go through a lot of those things in your mind, and you know, at the end of the day, you just got to stay ready. And you know, it's a long season. It's something, you know, I learned early last year that, you know, how long of a season it is. And, you know, when I wasn't playing, I was like, dang, I wonder if I'm going to get in the game. And it was only 15 games in the season, you know, and then I realized how many more games we had left. So, you know, it's a long year, and I think I learned a lot from not, you know, playing. I had the opportunity to watch a lot, with a pretty good seat, and just kind of learn from the guys around me. And, obviously we have really good vets on the team that, you know, helped me out with that. And once I got my opportunity, I was ready. And, you know, I think that's a credit to just me, you know, staying in the gym and not getting down on myself.
And the coaching staff says exactly that you kept yourself ready, you kept an even keel, and you stayed in the gym and kept getting better and better. You know, what about the culture? I mean, I've talked to trailblazer after trailblazer, and they tell me that playing in Portland is a really special experience because of the passion of the fans and the connection that those fans feel to those players. What's it been like for you?
It's amazing. You know, I've had the luxury of playing, you know, the last 2 years of basketball in front of, you know, arguably the best fans in college and the best fans in the NBA. So I think the fact that they're there every night, you know, with how long our season is and how excited they get, no matter if it's a game in December or a game, you know, in May, you know, like everybody is excited for every single game, and they really support us. And, you know, when we're not playing well, you know, they'll let us know about it, but they're not going to stop being our fan. They're, you know, they're ride or die fans. So it's definitely fun to play for, you know, an organization with fans like that.
You know, Zach, before you go, speaking of college, you played for Mark Few at Gonzaga. Actually, you played for Grant Rice in high school, another icon, but then Mark Few, who is one of my favorite guys in college basketball. What was it like to play for him, and what were some of your biggest takeaways from your time at Gonzaga?
He required the best of you. He never settled for, you know, for his players to be average and just to be just good enough. You know, he was always pushing us. He was always challenging us to be better. And, you know, every day in practice, whether we were, you know, really bad or really good, he always pretty much kept the same attitude with us, that, you know, we could be better no matter what, how good we're doing, we could be better. And he definitely challenges as a team, and he challenges as individuals to keep pushing each other. So that's one thing I took away, is that, you know, no matter how good we were, he never let us get too high, and he never let us got too low. You know, he was really pretty much even keeled all season, and he really required a lot of us, and I think that helped us a lot.
So last thought, when you look back on the Final Four and the title game, what do you remember the most? I mean, is it the games and your performances, or is it the connection that you have with your teammates?
You know, it was that whole week, and honestly, with the, you know, the connection we had with that team is really funny, because I remember earlier in the season we had a team retreat, kind of like a team bonding weekend, and we, towards the end of that weekend, we were all just kind of talking to each other, and we all had this big idea, kind of a dream to be in that national championship game, to be the first team in Gonzaga history to go to a Final Four. Like, you know, we all talked about that during the beginning of the season, and we were like, we could really do this. So, you know, to actually get there with that team and the way we did it, and it just meant everything. You know, it made that week so much better. And you know, I always tell people it's probably one of the best basketball weeks of my life. Just, you know, you get police escorts everywhere. You get all this, you know, this media attention. You know, you kind of feel like a rock star the whole week. So it was amazing. I'll never forget it.
We are joined by Jeff Eisenberg. Jeff, really nice to have you on today. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Really good, Jeff. Really good. So earlier this month, former UCLA basketball player Tyler Honeycutt was involved in a standoff with police in Sherman Oaks. He allegedly fired at police. He barricaded himself inside of a house as police fired back. And then hours later, police enter the home. They find him dead as the result of a reported self-inflicted gunshot wound. So let me first ask you, what was your reaction when you first heard that news?
Honestly, I was shocked. You know, I knew Tyler a little bit from his time at UCLA, and he just wasn't the kid that you would expect to be involved in something like this. So, you know, when I first heard it, I was obviously sad about it, but I also thought it was compelling, because I was curious, you know, about how a kid who I knew in high school and college could have ended up in this type of situation at the age of 27.
Jeff Eisenberg joining us. I mean, certainly. And then, as you write, Jeff, sometime before that standoff, he had reached out to his former high school coach, Bort Escoto. How would you describe the relationship between the two of them? And then what did Bort think when Honeycutt asked if they could talk?
So Bort is almost like a father figure to Tyler, or was, I should say. Tyler's parents were separated, and Bort sort of stepped into that father type role as Tyler's basketball career progressed in high school and beyond. And so when things were going wrong in the you know, his mom, Tyler's mom, was at his house basically trying to calm him down, and one of the people that Tyler reached out to at that point was Bort. And so Bort was actually on the way over to Tyler's house when Tyler's mom decided to call the police, because Tyler was acting unstable and erratic, and she was concerned both for his safety and potentially even her own. And then Bort didn't make it to the house in time before the police standoff started, and you know, obviously wasn't able to calm the situation before tragedy happened.
Jeff Eisenberg joining us. You know, I'm going to go back to that in a minute, but you do a really good job of laying out Honeycutt's journey. Let's go back to when he first started at Sylmar High School. What was he like as a player, Jeff? And was there any reason to think that he was somebody who was going to end up being a big-time college basketball player?
No, absolutely not. I mean, this was a kid who was like a 5'11 string bean when he arrived at Sylmar. You know, hadn't played a ton of high-level competitive basketball before that. But his sophomore year, he sprouted to 6'5", and he basically made a commitment to his high school coach. He said, I want to play at a high-level college, and I want to play in the NBA someday. And you know, look, obviously being 6'5 and bouncy and athletic certainly helps, but he put in a ton of work in high school, managed to get himself a scholarship to UCLA. He had offers from pretty much all the major West Coast schools, and worked his way into an NBA prospect to the point where he was able to turn pro after his sophomore year, get drafted by Sacramento, and, you know, all signs sort of pointed to him having a bright future. And, you know, pretty much as he was getting to the NBA, things started to go wrong for him.
All right, so let me ask you this. So Tyler chose UCLA, and during his freshman season, the team really struggled. At that time, what did the coaching staff and his teammates make of him, both as a person and as a player?
I think, like, you could see flashes of raw ability from Tyler that year. It was, like you said, really a bust of a season for UCLA. They went 14-18, finished below 500 for the fourth time since World War II that year. But Tyler was one of the bright spots both on and off the floor. You could see, kind of glimpses of his all-around game and versatility. And then you could also see that, like, he was one of the guys who kept teammates upbeat in the locker room. Like, he was a almost a team barber for his teammates. Like, every practice he would, kind of check guys' haircuts. And if someone wasn't looking fresh enough, he'd tell them to come up to his dorm room. And, he'd have a barber's cape and scissors and a chair ready. And, teammates would get all their haircuts from him. Just was a really positive, upbeat kid, which is, again, part of the reason why it was such a shocker, that he went through the mental health problems that he did later in his life and ended up, at least according to police, taking his own life.
Jeff Eisenberg joining us. You know, Jeff, what about his sophomore year? He has this absolutely huge performance against Kansas in Fog Allen Fieldhouse, 33 points, including a game-tying 25-footer with 5 seconds left. How much did that game change everything for Honeycutt?
I really think it really did change everything and unfortunately kind of set him on the course towards, some of the issues that ultimately led to his death. I don't think he had it in his head that he was leaving school after his sophomore year until that performance. But when he put up 33 points on 11 of 15 shooting at Kansas, like you said, hit that game tying three. I mean, really, if you remember one game from Tyler Honeycutt's career, college or pro, it's probably that one. And even though it ended up in a loss on a last-second foul by Malcolm Lee, I think the thing you remember from that game is how good Tyler looked against the Kansas team with, I think it's 5 or 6 NBA draft picks on it, and he was clearly the best player on the floor that night. So, agents started calling. He started rising on mock drafts. Really all the what you would call kind of the predators that happened at that time for a basketball product. Started circling him, and I think he was a little bit too immature to handle being an NBA prospect at that time, made some decisions that maybe he would regret, and I think that kind of contributed to the fact that he only did last for 2 years in the NBA.
Jeff Eisenberg is a college basketball writer for Yahoo Sports. So, Jeff, he was drafted by the Kings. He spent some time with their D-League team in Reno. What was the transition from college to professional basketball like for Honeycutt, and how well did he deal with it initially?
Yeah, not great. He got himself a new car, got himself some jewelry. So on that end, maybe he spent some money when he shouldn't have. He also, something that I didn't really include in the story because I wasn't sure it was appropriate at the time, but, it was later revealed that he had received some money when he was still in college after that Kansas game from an agent who helped support him and his mom. And then lastly, he shows up to the D-League team, and he's 30 minutes late for his first practice, 20 minutes late for his second practice, and 5-6 minutes late for his third practice. So, like, that's just not the impression that you want to make. And, look, if you're a lottery pick, I guess you can probably get away with that for a while. But he was the 35th pick in the draft. He's a second-round pick without a guaranteed contract. You can't do that. And so, look, he had NBA talent, no question. And even his D-League coach, who was, like, at the time, incredibly unhappy with it, admitted that he came to really like Tyler later because he had such a infectious, positive personality. But at the same time, if you're not a first-round pick, you don't have guaranteed money, the last thing you want to do is show up late to the first three practices. And a combination of that and him just, really being an average 19, 20-year-old with still some maturing to do, I don't think he made a great first impression with the Kings. He also had some injuries that he dealt with, and by the midway through his second year, they decided he was expendable and included him in a cost-cutting trade, and that was pretty much the end of his NBA career right there.
I was going to say, they trade him to Houston, and then after a short stint with the Rockets D-League team, they waive him. Where did he go from there?
So he went to Europe and he played at a very high level in Europe. He played in Israel and Turkey and in Russia the latter 3 years on EuroLeague teams, which is the top league in Europe. And he did well. Like the one of the bigger mysteries of kind of how things went wrong was the fact that his final season in Russia might have been his best season as a pro. He shot 49% from 3-point range. The previous year, he had won a dunk contest in Turkey. He was part of successful teams. He was a starter. Like, I think it was probably a long shot that he was going to find his way back into the NBA, since the NBA doesn't take a lot of 27-year-old guys. They prefer, kind of to look for upside with 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. But with that said, like, he was clearly going to make significant income, and live a very comfortable life playing in Europe for the next, 5 to 10 years if he wanted to.
Jeff Eisenberg, my guest. So, Jeff, at that point in his life and his career, was there anything to indicate that he was having really tough times emotionally and psychologically?
To most of his friends, the answer to that question was no. They still found him to be upbeat and the same as he had been his whole life. But if you talk to his high school coach, who, like I said before, was kind of a father figure to him, you know, they noticed signs when he returned from Russia in mid-June that he wasn't the same guy, that, he usually was around a ton of friends and was very gregarious. But when he got home from Russia, he started kind of holding himself up in his room and in his house. He would kind of reach out and say he wanted to talk one day, and then a few hours later would say he was too tired and didn't want to do it. Just kind of all sorts of the red flags started showing up. He wasn't eating, wasn't sleeping as well. And, you know, his family and his high school coach really did try to get him help over the last few weeks, but he kind of pushed them away, and it just didn't happen in time.
We're talking to Jeff Eisenberg for a few more moments. We're talking about Tyler Honeycutt. So, Jeff, bottom line, from your conversations with the people that cared about him, how do they explain what happened to him and how he ended up in a situation where he was barricading himself in a standoff with police?
Well, I would say the person closest to him who I spoke to is the high school coach, and I think that what he felt like was that Tyler was depressed from the idea of having to go back to Russia next year. He had tried to get the NBA interest. It didn't work out, and so he was basically facing a situation where he either needed to return to the professional team in Russia or find another team in Europe. And I think the idea of Russia in particular, but also even Europe in general, being that far from his friends and family, really was a kind of a trigger for his depression. And I don't think that we know all of the things that led to the incident and to his apparent suicide, but I certainly think that that was one of the big ones, the idea of not being able to get a look in the NBA and having to go back to a foreign country where he clearly felt pretty isolated and alone.
You know, Jeff, there's always been this stigma about talking about mental health among athletes, the thinking being that if you admit that you need help, it's a sign of weakness. Having covered both professional and college basketball for a while now, have you noticed a change in how mental health is discussed now versus when you first started covering sports?
I think we're getting there, but I think it's a slow process. I mean, Kevin Love's piece in the Players Tribune was certainly a big thing. I think if you remember Ron Artest talking about having a therapist back in the day when he was on those Lakers championship teams, I think that was a pivotal moment. So, you know, I think we're coming along, but I think that stigma still exists. And, you know, athletes are kind of taught to tough it out. And, you know, that's great for a sprained ankle, I guess. But, we've seen it with concussions in the NFL, and I think we see it in all walks of life, and especially athletics with mental health, that, you know, it's not something that you can just play through and tough it out. You need help. And, I think Tyler's story, the only silver lining that you can get from it is, you know, maybe it'll convince someone in his shoes to get help. Because by all accounts, like everyone who knew him in high school and college, it's stunned by this because they just remember him as such a positive, upbeat, grounded kid. And, you know, for things to turn out like this, it's just sad.
So, Jeff, finally, you answered that in part. I was going to say, what should people remember about Tyler Honeycutt and his story?
I guess the biggest takeaway that I would have is that this sort of thing can happen to anybody, and that, it's important to ask your friends and ask your family, what they're going through, try to understand it best you can. And above all else, if you're feeling like this, ask for help. And if you know somebody who is, try to get them help, because, the situation can turn tragic in a big hurry otherwise.
Mark in Boston. Mark, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim, man. Listen, I know I RSVP'd last week, but after hearing Brad's RSVP on Friday, I'm actually calling to rescind. If that guy is that locked in the week before the smack-off, what chance do any of us, quote, lames have? I mean, how are we supposed to compete with the level of straight fire with lines like, Chad in L.A. sucks, Mike in Indy's a bitch, and Caleb in Green Bay makes sandwiches for a living? rip up your script, boys. It's over. It's over. Plus, I mean, the Canadians are getting a lot of run, and I'd be lying if I didn't envy some of that love. But I want to give a quick shout out to Rich Ackerman. Rich, I know they recruited you to Team Canada, but under no circumstance should you let these two losers body shame you. I do not let Tyler convince you to do his pistachio and meth diet plan. You need your teeth for your job. And under no circumstance should you let Matt Photoshop the two extra chins off of his face like he does when he submits pictures to Hawk with that weird thing on his face. And I've got some news for you Canadians. I'm actually on your turf right now. That's right, I'm sitting at a syrup bar in Canada on a recruiting mission for Team America. And I'm joined on my journey by jungle legend, former Kansas Jayhawk head coach Mark Mangino. Mark, say hi.
What's going on?
We're the Americans. And right now, the Americans are trolling Brova Scotia or Saskatchewan or whatever the hell you call those weird provinces, looking for Canadian girls to feed, trying to convince them they don't need to hunt for their food, they can gain independent wealth outside of the flannel factory, and that by joining the Americans, they can actually touch the Stanley Cup. We tried to recruit a celebrity, but we just couldn't seem to find anyone. We reached out to Michael J. Fox, but he said he couldn't shake free of his previous engagements.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
So I just said, there's almost nothing that this guy could do right now that would get me to uninvite him for Friday. And what does he do? He comes in and says, we invited Michael J. Fox, but he was unable to shake free of some previous engagements. Hey, Mark, there are some things that you just don't do. There are some things you just don't say. There are some places you don't go. That would be one of them. Despite that, that's a warning. Rex, how was your weekend, Rex?
It was good. I hope you enjoyed Santa Barbara, Jim.
I did, Rex.
Hey,
thank you.
Smack-off participants are at each other's throats on Twitter right now. I know the smack-off is their Super Bowl, but if you're going to be that angry, be angry about something important, like the bag who leaves the coffee pod in the Keurig machine when he's done, or the redneck who parks his lifted Dodge with truckticles 1 inch from your door in an empty parking lot at Chili. Or when you swipe your card at Target and the checker goes, you need to put it in the chip reader. Then he smiles while he exercises his ultimate power behind the register. The bickering is getting really old, about as old as that Miracle Whip in the office fridge that has Rhonda's name printed on it in Sharpie. Like, yeah, Rhonda, I'm going to make my sandwich with your 3-year-old expired bottle of mayonnaise substitute. Have a good one, Jim. I'm out.
Rack him? John in New York. John, how are you?
Jim, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me again.
You got it. What you got today?
Jim, if you're a Mets fan, it's a terrible situation. It's an embarrassment. You'll find more guts in the chum buckets around Flushing Bay than you would in the dugout at Citi Field. I just wish the Wilpons would just sell this team and just be done with it. They're better off in investments anyway. But on Friday, Jim, I enjoyed the show's new segment, Dugs in the Jungle, hosted by ninth-place Smack-Off finisher contestant Vic in NoCal, where the self-appointed Jungle Don was going to spare Anger Management Award-winning Rick in Buffalo's life if he left the jungle for good. Are you kidding me, Victor, with that soft, charming material? Hey, wait. I got you, Vic. I got you on this one. We'll employ sidewalk and gutter rat reporter Matt in L.A. to give us up-to-the-minute takes on what's new in street cred. Yeah, I got news for you. Jeff and Tan Antonio's Come For the Legends cry put more fear in people's hearts. Don't bring your fake gangster overtone here, Vic. Your boys on the block probably gave you a slap for that. Soft bitch. Take it easy, Jim, and hopefully I'll hear from you on Friday.
John in New York. Okay, now. I gave him a ticket. I said, if you want to keep that ticket, you got to call back. And he did, and did well. And I said, John, that's good. You need to call back again if you want to keep that ticket. So he did, right there. Was that good? Good enough. See you Friday, John. Tyler in Edmonton. Tyler, what's going on?
What's going on, Rom? How you doing, man?
Good, dude. How about you?
I'm good. Gotta love the smack-off build-up, man. It's like a McGregor fight. What's the McGregor fight without a tour of him running his mouth in an effort to sell tickets? That's what I do, man. I don't hide. I don't hoard. I sell tickets. And don't tell me it isn't working either, because the last couple months people have been calling in to talk about, well, me. And real quick to Mark, meth and pistachio diet smack. Nice, bro. So you crush Brad for his terrible takes, and then you use meth smack that's more outdated than a Stevie Carbone smack-off title. That's an interesting approach, man. Rome, what Mark forgot to tell you is that he knows that when the Canadian Empire takes off, it's him in his depth position coming off the bench that's going to be in tough for a contract renewal. Mark, I would tread lightly on the skinny smack. There's a couple reasons, man. One, it's a Dan in Denver take. And two, those picks are already rolling into CBS, and the picks don't lie, my friend. And then we have the runt of the litter, Chad in L.A. I got to be honest, man, I'm kind of feeling bad for this dude. As a side note, Romy, I appreciate you hammering that guy with the dump button on Friday, but I can guarantee that wasn't the fastest this beggar's ever been dumped. Let's see, he went no phone line smack, Mounties riding horses smack, then moose coin smack. This guy recycled more jokes on Friday than that idiot Cal in Vegas did. And by the way, Chad, I'd rather be a Mountie riding a horse than be some pill addict from Los Angeles who rides around on a steer named Lef all day. Chadley, bro, you got to know your role, man. Come this Friday, you're going to be the equivalent of Austin Huff at the Oscars. So go rent yourself a tux, shut your mouth when you show up, and admire the view of me and my dime piece date when we roll in with the real players. And lastly, Jim, to the B-I-C, Brad, just like you called out Matt for allegedly misunderstanding the Stucknut odds, I'm going to call you out for clearly misunderstanding that blast from him about the Northern Sando. Because if you were actually paying attention, Brad, what he said was, we called off the Northern Sando before Miss Corona could even sneak out the back door on you. She won her Canadian golden ticket, sent one bad email with a couple selfies, and she got the smacky chopper harder than Fluke in Fort Collins. And Bradley, if you need to know why she isn't up to our standards, just take a look at the pics scrolling across Rome's screen right now. Romy, you might need to help the folks that are home with what I'm talking about. I'll do what I can by paying homage to your vacation take. Romy, you know why I show off my perfect tens? Because I get so many perfect tens. I'm out.
10. Rack him, Tyler in Edmonton.
Good night now!